Every day, CT testifies to the reality that Jesus is alive, transforming his world and bringing his kingdom to bear. Jesus transforms, CT equips. Make a gift to our nonprofit ministry with a gift of $20 to provide 150 more people with redemptive storytelling, global perspective, and thoughtful podcasts. Give now at morect.com/equip.
Today's episode is brought to you by the Christian Standard Bible. The CSB blends accuracy and readability, giving pastors a translation they can trust and lay people a Bible they can enjoy. Find out more at csbible.com.
There's a pine warbler sitting on a hollow limb. He seems to have the whole morning out right in front of him. And everything he sings from the branch that he's sitting on, it seems to hush the leaves and the colors all around. Now first he sings, and then he goes, and what it means, it's hard to know.
You're listening to Cultivated, conversations about faith and work. I'm Mike Cosper, and on today's episode, my guest is Justin Forsett. Justin is a retired Pro Bowl running back from the NFL, who's now an entrepreneur. His journey is an incredible story about overcoming adversity and clinging to faith in extraordinary circumstances. Stay with us.
Now why can't you stay with me? Why don't you tell me? 'Cause it makes a fool of me. Eden was a garden, you know. The birds were in the trees until the place was gone. They scattered to the wind and then they just kept moving on.
I grew up in a small town, Mulberry, Florida.
Okay.
A town of 3,000 people. Just hardworking blue collar town. Most people, when they graduate high school, they go into our phosphate mining business that we had, or our local furniture store. Not a lot of people make it out to accomplish their like dreams and goals and aspirations. But I grew up in a nice faith driven home. My two parents, my dad was a pastor. I was a PK.
No kid.
I was a middle child of three boys. So, it was an interesting childhood, lots of challenges and adversity, but also some great times and some great memories along the way.
I guess you grow up and you're in church every time the doors are open.
Yeah.
Mr. Dad.
Especially in the South, you know, we do church a little bit different. You know, we had Monday where you're going to choir rehearsal, Bible study Wednesday, you're going in their church to clean up, you're going in, you know, Sunday school, all those things. And I played the drums when I was for my dad's church growing up. So we were always there constantly, but I didn't really have a true relationship with God or with Jesus until, you know, I was, I want to say maybe 13 years old, 12, 13 years old, which is young.
Yeah, they're still young, What happened? What woke you up?
For me, we battled, like I said, a lot of hardships, a lot of adversity. And I remember at some of our tough times, you know, my dad, like, we're always faith-driven, loving home, but we dealt with financial issues consistently throughout early in my childhood. We never owned a home, bounced from home to home. I remember times when the power was out, having to do my homework under candlelight, or no water in the house, so we had to take baths with bottled water. Running from the repo man, where you're parking a car down the street and walking home so we wouldn't get the car repossessed. And then at our very lowest, I remember staying out, we were living out of a motel at the edge of town, Super 8 motel. I remember just like it was yesterday, room 108. I remember the blue, green, vomit-looking carpet that was on the floor. I remember the two queen-size beds for all five of us. I remember the huge window that overlooked the main street in our town where cars could come by. And I remember my dad begging my dad, just like, "Dad, please park in the back because I don't want to see the kids. I don't want the kids to see me, see us living out of here." And it was just a tough time. And in the midst of that financial instability that we were going through, I also had an identity crisis. I was a middle child and never really felt like I got the best. I was remembering changing up the way I dressed and talked to fit in with other people. At home, I was always the one getting disciplined for whatever reason. And I just didn't really feel like, you know, like I belong. And I would hear my dad talk about this guy named Jesus. on Sundays. Normally I would, you know, be sleeping in the back pew, but, you know, I would listen to him. And one Sunday it connected with me where this guy, Jesus, he loved me and he had plans for me and he wanted to use me. And for someone that didn't really feel like he was worth being used, that stuck out to me. Mm-hmm. And I really resonated with that. And I allowed God to, you know, come into my heart. Mm-hmm. And at that age, and my life had been changed since, you know, just trying to live for him, knowing that my steps are ordered by him. He has a plan, a purpose for my life, and I'm just trying to chase after him. Now, there's been some difficulty along the way, but
for sure,
that's kind of where it started.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds rough, man. Sounds intense. Were you always athletic from early on?
Early on, I knew I was gifted in sports, especially football. I knew that's kind of what I wanted to do. That's kind of like my ticket out of where we came from, playing football. I saw a guy named Barry Sanders on Sunday, and I was like, man, I want to do that one day. And even going to Publix grocery store, getting my first poster of Barry Sanders, and it said, man, a machine, and I'm putting up on my bedroom wall. And just had dreams, aspirations, like, this is my ticket out. But I was always small and short. You know, everyone's placing limitations on me, saying, like, this is not, you know, quite for you. You're too slow, too short, too small, all these different things. But my mom used to tell me all the time, faith without works is dead, son. So I knew I had the faith, and I just had to put in the work and time. So I did whatever it took, you know, growing up, you know, going through middle school and high school, playing football, and people telling me what I couldn't do. I would do while everybody else in high school was going out drinking, you know, partying with girls. I was doing 1,000 push-ups and sit-ups a night. I was looking at videos of past running backs that made it out of tough situations, like Eddie George. I was watching, like, how they train, the different things that they would do to become better at their position and as football players. And, you know, I was even reading stories about, I don't know, Jim Abbott and Wilmer Rudolph, like people that had to, you know, go through difficult things, and just for inspiration and motivation. But being an athlete, that was kind of what I wanted to do.
Yeah. When did you kind of know, like, hey, I'm good at this, I can do it?
In high school, I grew up, like I said, in Mulberry, Florida. And when I got to high school, I went straight to varsity, playing on a varsity level. 9th and 10th grade, had success there. And then I moved to Texas my junior year in Arlington, Texas, played at this private school out there, a Christian school. And I had, you know, some more success. So although I wasn't getting scholarship offers in at the time, I knew, like, then, like, okay, this is definitely, you know, something I can pursue.
One of the first real challenges in Justin's career came from the transition between high school and college. Though he had a lot of success in the game and success on the field, he had a reputation for being a hard worker. He wasn't immediately attracting attention from recruiters.
Yeah, it was tough for me because, just like I said at the beginning, everyone was, you know, they saw my outside stature, you know, they placed limitation on me, didn't think I would ever be able to play football at a college level. Recruiters would come down and say, too small, too slow, these things. And I didn't have really a scholarship offer until after my All-Star game in my senior year. And I was from Notre Dame, and they came down and said, man, we like you, we want to offer you a scholarship. And I was excited because I was like, man, this is it. You know, God is really doing the work right here. He's just setting it all up. We're Golden Domer, touchdown Jesus, Rudy. I'm like, man, I'm the black Rudy. This just makes sense. This is where I'm supposed to be, the underdog. And I remember a week before signing day, I got a call from Notre Dame telling me they didn't need me anymore. I remember going down into my basement, just crying my eyes out, because I was that guy and that kid in school that was, you know, going to Bible study. I was reading his word, praying every night, and had a relationship with God. But through all of that, I saw other people receiving the blessings that I wanted. Mm-hmm. And this was another heartbreak for me. So I remember going down to my basement, crying, getting on my knees, like, God, I can't do this anymore. You got to show me something. Like, I'm trying to live the way you called me to live. I'm reading, I'm trying to bring people closer to you. And yet I have nothing, you know, to show for it. And during that time, the only thing I knew how to do was open my Bible. And I opened up, literally just flipped the page open and fell on Proverbs 3:5-6, where it talks about trusting the Lord God with all your heart, lean not on your own understanding, acknowledge him in all your ways, and he'll direct your path. And at that moment, I could literally feel like God's presence on me, like he was wrapping his arms around me, this warmth that overcame me. And I felt this peace that surpassed all understanding at that moment. I was like, I don't know where I'm gonna go to school. I don't know. I know it looks bleak. My future looks bleak. I don't have any scholarship offers. Here we are in February. National Signing Day is happening. And I don't have a school to go to, but God has a plan for me. And I'm not gonna lean on what the circumstance look like. I'm gonna lean on God. Couple months down the road, maybe in May.
After signing day,
everyone's going to school. People tell me, man, you need to go somewhere, man. Just go to junior college. And I was on my way to a historically black college at the time because I had nowhere else. You know, I was talking to some schools in that division. Out of nowhere, my dad get a call from UC Berkeley saying they went off of me a scholarship. I was like, what? UC Berkeley went off of me a scholarship? I'm like, little old me? And my dad was like, yeah. I was like, where is UC Berkeley? Like, I'd never heard of Cal football. Pac-10 football was foreign to me. Like, I was in the South, Florida, Florida State, Texas, A&M, all those schools. That's the schools I knew. But God opened up that door, ended up going there, playing with some great players. My freshman year, came in same class as a guy named Marshawn Lynch, who ended up being sort of a big deal. And we played together, Aaron Rodgers, you know, and at that time, that season, my freshman year, we were ranked number 11 in the country going into football season. So it was a pretty good team.
I didn't know Aaron Rodgers was from there.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers is there too. Yep. Besides the good players, man.
Yeah, no doubt. To look back and go, okay, look where these guys have gone. I mean, you're a Pro Bowl player, Rodgers, future Hall of Famer.
Oh, sure.
Lynch, you know, beast mode, the whole thing. Do you look back on that time and just see it as like, was there a sense of like, man, there's something really special happening here with us being able to play together?
No doubt. I mean, I just knew the players were special for sure. First time I stepped on the campus, Aaron Rodgers, you know, who's one of the first guys that came up to me. He had already watched my highlight tape, knew where I was from. And I was a late add-on in the recruiting process. Like, they were in spring football, which is unheard of. Somebody got hurt, which opened up a scholarship spot for me. And I came in and, yeah, he came up to me. He was just like, man, I want to work with you, help you out. And we had, you know, a talented team. And it was a program that was on the rise. And you can feel that with some of the air. We had some special players. So
yeah,
definitely.
For sure. Talk to me about, like, college football world seems, you know, oftentimes, and I'm sure this is true with the NFL too, but specifically with college, like, the party scene, you know, all the kind of circus that goes around that. What was it like trying to be a Christian in the midst of some of that in college?
For me, going on campus, like, I had never, like, really went to a party before I went to, you know, college. So my first time there, I would go to, like, you know, some parties that maybe was, like, some of the soccer teams was putting on, hanging out, you know, but nothing too crazy. For me, I still had, like, my faith was still very much part of my life. I had a close relationship. I was always in church still. I was connected with some other believers that were able to hold me accountable, but it was a great time for me as a believer, especially going from Bible Belt to Berkeley, which is traditional, a liberal university in old area. I mean, you think about the Bay Area. It actually pushed me closer to God because I had to know why I believed. Because in that atmosphere, Christians were made fun of, like in the classroom by professors, like, yeah, this is some joke, you know, like, you know, this made up fairy tale that, you know, these people believe in. I'm looking around, I'm like, man, this is what I believe, you know, I believe in God, I believe in the Bible, the gospel. And I always come across these people from different backgrounds, different belief systems, religions. And I had never came across that before. And I had to have a reason why I believe what I believe. And it pushed me to really get a deeper understanding of why I believe. Yeah, it drew me closer in that regard, in my faith, and met my wife there. Football was going well. Was having some success on the field. So I had a great time, man.
Yeah, that's great. Like, I think it's probably really significant that you stayed rooted in a church in the midst of that.
Yeah.
Because it's probably easy in the midst of the rigor of football and, you know, you're still a student and all that. It would have been easy to let that slip away. But
yeah, sure. I mean, and most people say, when kids go to college, they lose their faith. But the truth of the matter is, like, when kids go to college, they don't lose their faith. They lose their parents' faith. They never had a really genuine, authentic relationship and walk with Christ, you know, entering in college. Like, it was something that they did because their parents did it.
Yeah.
For me, because I had that encounter, that personal encounter with Christ early on in my walk, and I experienced him in a real way, and it was my decision. When I got there, I was rooted on something. I was founding in something. So it was that, even though I made mistakes and, you know, definitely had some hard times and struggles, but my faith was always there, always a part of my life.
Yeah, that's well put. Any specific memories from those college years, games you played, stuff that you look back on with particular fondness?
Oh, man. Just that whole, especially my freshman year, it was crazy because I was supposed to redshirt by, you know, the experts, but I ended up being a true freshman playing, especially we had a talented backfield. We had J.J. Arrington, who was the leading rusher, I want to say, in the country at the time. Then Marshawn Lynch, who was a number two running back in the country coming out of high school. And then there's this little guy from this private Christian school from Texas, you know, that's playing on the same field. And, you know, Aaron Rodgers. Just that time, it was just like, man, we were winning lots of football games. And that was just like my entry into college football. So that whole time, my freshman year was special. Just being able to play and be a part of it and changing like a culture of a football team.
Being one of those backup backs, I mean, I imagine like a lot of times that role, you're throwing a lot of blocks. You're helping to open things up for the number one back. Mm-hmm. What was serving in that role kind of like?
Sure. I mean, you're doing the grunt work. You know, I play a lot of special teams. I wasn't seeing much action unless we were blowing the team out on offense. You know, just playing, doing whatever I could do to get on the field. You know, catching kick returns, blocking for other people on kick returns. Yeah, it's a tough job, but it's having that mindset like, man, I know I can play. I just got to be prepared when my opportunity comes. So that's just my whole life has been a big, you know, preparation process for my big moment, which came in, you know, later in my career.
Hey, we'll get back to this interview in just a second. But first, I think every Christian has experienced one of those aha moments in their faith. Sometimes they come in times of prayer and brokenness. Sometimes they come from experiences in community with one another. And sometimes, perhaps most often, they come when we're reading the scriptures. They're these great moments when God's word comes to life. But often we struggle with the Bible. In some translations, the language is so archaic or needlessly complex that we're tempted to give up in frustration. I love what they've done, blending pinpoint accuracy with a reading experience that makes engaging with the word inviting. Reading the Bible shouldn't be a chore. Learn more about this much-needed translation at csbible.com. Talk to me about going from college to the NFL. Did you go through the draft or what was?
Yeah. So I ended up my last year, I was a starting running back at Cal. I had some great success there with the team, individual success, and set myself up to get in a position to get drafted. Ended up getting drafted in the 7th round by the Seattle Seahawks. You know, it was a team where they had just, like I said earlier, they had two free agent running backs that they picked up in T.J. Duncan and Julius Jones. At the time, I was along with Maurice Morris, who was the running back there. That was there for a long time. And I was just kind of a guy that, you know, was hoping to just kind of groom. Yeah. I dropped all the way down from the 7th round. I was supposed to get drafted in the 3rd round. Yeah, you know, it was just a lot of doubt. You know, people didn't know what to expect from a you know, short, small guy like myself to anything I'd play long. And, you know, from then, just getting drafted, you know, just the proven process of just, man, I belong here, I can play here, and just waiting for my opportunity.
It's funny, because I, you know, when I was reading about you before this interview, you know, I saw some of that stuff about like sort of uncertainty around you because you were smaller. Mm-hmm. But I mean, there's kind of a history in the NFL of like great smaller backs, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're not the only guy who's under 6 feet tall who turned out to be a great NFL running back.
Yeah, no. And, you know, there are some, you know, some coaches are old school and, you know, being 5'8 and 195 pound running back, you know, they have a specific idea of what a guy like my size can do.
Yeah.
And they couldn't look oversee that. You know, most people like, oh, he's a third down guy. He can come in and play some special teams, but that's all he can do. Most people didn't envision running back my size being a feature back where he can play all three downs and, you know, run, block, catch, and do all those things and withstand the physicality of playing in the NFL. So there were guys like that before me that could do it, like your Barry Sanders, but those guys were, you know, when you're short, you got to be as, you know, freakishly quick, freakishly fast. And I wasn't necessarily, you know, freakishly, you know, fast or anything like that by any means. But I had some quickness, had some abilities I could catch, and I could block very well, especially being my size. Like, that's kind of what was my, you know, trademark, so to speak, for me being able to play as long as I did.
Let's talk about kind of the the trajectory of your career then. So you was drafted by the Seahawks. You spent your first couple of years kind of on a couple of different rosters, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. What was that like? What's going through your mind as you're... Because you're drafted by the Seahawks, and then you ended up with the Colts in September, which I'm a raging Colts fan. So I saw that. I was like, oh, he's a Colt for a month.
Yeah, for a month. Yes. Just a cup of coffee.
But it still counts, man.
Yeah, it definitely counts.
Yeah. And then back to the Seahawks. Mm-hmm. So you had a lot of transition in those early years. What's going through your mind as you're grinding that out?
It was tough, man. Just because, I mean, I believe, especially making the opening day roster with the Seahawks, feeling like, oh, this is where I'm going to be. And then that second week, you know, the next week being, you know, cut and off to Indy. I label at least my whole NFL career has been an unstable blessing, especially early on. You know, it's unstable where I didn't know where I was going to be, if I was going to be able to play. But it was a blessing because I always got a shot, had an opportunity. So it was definitely tough. A lot of things going on. You know, your first year in the league, you know, I'm breaking leases to apartments, going from city to city, which is expensive.
Were you married by then?
No, I wasn't married at the time. Okay. My wife, who at the time, I want to say she was on the USA volleyball team, so she was traveling. It was just tough because also my mom was battling cancer, very strong at that time, thyroid cancer. And it was very tough. I remember getting that right when after getting released from the Colts. Just my dad was telling me, you know, that he didn't know if she had much longer, the doctors were telling. It was like, man, I got to make it because I got to be able to help out, help support my family. So I was kind of motivated and pushed, you know, by some other factors to just kind of like, I got to figure out a way to make this work.
Yeah. So how'd you make it work?
Oh, man. Prayer. I mean, God is definitely, I can't take the credit for it because there were times like I came in and they used me as punt returner, special teams player. And I wasn't necessarily gifted at that. I just want to. It's like I had to make it work. And I never caught punts in my life. And it was just like this scary, freaky thing, guys, kicking the ball up in the air for 5 or 6 seconds. And you got to wait there for it to come down. The wind's blowing it from left and right and swaying. Then you got guys chasing you down, trying to take your head off. And your eyes is, you know, bobbling back from, you know, up and down, trying to look at the tacklers and look at the ball, make sure you don't drop the ball, all these type of things going through your head. And I remember sitting back there. I mean, my first game catching a punt, I played with the Colts. So my first actual game that I played in was being with the Annapolis Colts. And they threw me out there. And I'm just literally like, because I wasn't good. I was always dropping them in practice. And but I never dropped them in the game.
Really?
And
oh, that's great.
And it's crazy. Yeah. And this guy's like, is he going to be able to catch this stuff in the game? And I was just literally like, God, so protect the ball. Don't worry about me. And I'll be literally saying this prayer, like, protect the ball. That's the first thing. I just want to catch the ball and be okay and make sure I'm still on the roster. And that first game, I ended up setting up the game-winning touchdown for the Colts. And I remember Peyton Manning coming up to me after the game, and he was like, hey, man, you did that. You set us up for that victory, man, and offered me a beer. And it was like one of the greatest moments, especially in my young career, just getting that kind of respect from, you know, one of the greatest to ever do it.
Sure.
No, it was a special time. You know, even with the uncertainty, not knowing where you're going to be, it was a blessing just to be able to provide for my family.
Yeah. After a couple of years, things did kind of stabilize. You got on some rosters, started to play. When did you feel like you had some ground under your feet and, you know, you knew what you were doing, you knew you were playing?
I didn't really feel like, okay, I'm going to have some time here. Until after my Baltimore season.
Okay.
After being let go by Jacksonville Jaguars and not knowing if I was ever going to play again, because if you can't play for the Jaguars, I mean, who can you play for? Maybe the Browns? But I didn't know. They weren't calling. So I was just kind of out there not knowing. I was getting ready to transition out of football. You know, I stayed in shape just in case the call came. And call came, Baltimore. They had the whole Ray Rice situation, of course, that happened. So they were looking for extra back just in case he was suspended for the whole year. They didn't know what that was going to look like. Ended up, you know, he got suspended, released from the team. They threw me in the lineup, and I got a chance to show what I could do. And after years of preparation, maximized my opportunity, into a Pro Bowl, signed a long-term deal, my first long-term deal. In the NFL, and I kind of felt like, okay, like, they like me here, and they kind of put a ring on it, so to speak, using the words of Beyonce.
Yeah. What was it like knowing you made the Pro Bowl? How did that feel?
Man, it was like an emotional, I would say, rush that I had, because it was years. Like, you think about thinking about like football, just all the setback and rejection and all the hurt that I went, disappointment that I went through, just being cut, being fired, being rejected by schools, or people telling me that I can never do what I was doing, you know, at that level. I was just feeling overwhelmed. I remember the Panthers, and I'm having a pretty good game with the Panthers in the middle of the season. And, you know, I'm on my way to pro. I'm top five rusher at this point. And just like in the overjoy, like with emotion on the sideline, like literally coming into tears, like, man, I can't believe like this is happening. Yeah. You know, I'm age 29 at running back, and year 7 of my career. Just got fired, not knowing if I was going to ever play football again. And here I am about to, you know, head to a Pro Bowl. Was pretty special.
I bet. Yeah, I mean, to see it in the context of your whole story, it is incredible. That's amazing. I mean, your perseverance to, like, tough it out through all that stuff, you know, starting from being a kid, but then it's like you had obstacles at every turn. So I can imagine that was a big moment. During your years in the NFL, like, what sustained your faith? I mean, you're moving around. It's probably hard to get connected to churches. What sustained you during that time?
Man, my faith was all I had. In a life that I lived of inconsistencies, that was the only thing that was consistent. Just bouncing from place to place, you know, physically, it never wavered my faith. Like, I was always able to get connected with somebody. You know, every team, they had some, you know, a group of believers that I could, you know, link on to, you know, get encouragement, even in the down times. Like, in that Jacksonville phase of my career, like, I was down in the dumps. Like, I was... felt like I was not getting a fair shake. I was laughed at, mocked, ridiculed, criticized, you name it. And I went to work frustrated every day. But there was a guy there, the team chaplain, named Anthony Johnson, that constantly, every day when negativity was being poured onto me, he was constantly pouring into me, reminding me what God thought of me, what God wanted of me during that time. Like, he was always encouraging me within the negativity. So I was always being connected with people that was, you know, of Christ. It was kingdom-minded, that was lifting me up through the tough times. And, I just, for whatever reason, God placed some great people in my life to help me.
That's fantastic. When did you decide to leave?
Man, that last year, it was just difficult. It was year 9, and I started off with Baltimore in the first 3 weeks, and then they placed me on the inactive roster in week 4, I want to say, and then week 5 I got released, asked for my release, and it was like a mutual parting of the ways, and I went to Detroit, and then I was there for maybe 6 weeks, and remember I saw my family. They came out and rented an apartment out in Detroit. My family came out. My wife was pregnant at the time, maybe 6 months pregnant, had my 2 kids, I think they were probably around a 3-year-old and 1-year-old at the time. After that week six, I got cut and released, and Denver picked me up. So I was on my way to Denver, and my wife, who was, you know, pregnant with the 2 kids, she had to pack up everything in Detroit and drive everything back to our home in Baltimore through a snowstorm, you know, 9 hours with those kids in the back and pregnant. And I was just like, man, I can't put them through this, you know, any longer. And, you know, and just the craziness of the business part of football and what the NFL brings. And I was just ready to move on. I felt like God had opened some other doors for me for speaking and running my company. So I was ready to transition out.
Yeah, tell me about your company.
Yeah, started a company called Shower Pill with a couple of my college teammates. We create active care products for people on the go. Our hero product has been the body wipe, which is a disposable washcloth, antibacterial towelette to be able to clean up after workouts, Pilates, camping, hiking, yoga, you name it. And just a place where a tool that you can use to freshen up throughout your day is hygiene on the go.
Yeah, what made you decide to be an entrepreneur?
Man, I always wanted to, you know, be an entrepreneur, give back to my community, provide jobs for people. And, you know, I love the mindsets of guys that athletes before me, like Magic Johnson, like Michael Jordan, like John Elway was another guy, Ronnie Lott. Those guys were like successful off the field. You know, football wasn't something that defined them. They used it as a stepping stool to, you know, propel them into the next phase of their life. Because, you know, I'm 30. When I retired at 31. So I got a lot of life to live. I want to be kind of one of those, you know, those moguls, you know, like like a Magic or in the music world, like a Jay-Z or a Diddy.
Yeah. You got more stuff cooking in your mind beyond the business you're running now? I mean, you see yourself starting other stuff?
Well, I have the hygiene company, personal care company, and then I do my speaking company that I have, where I do corporate talks for companies all over the country, from like Wells Fargo, Verizon, you know, Remax, all these different companies where I go out and I encourage, because all the stuff that I've been through, perseverance and adversity, now I'm able to go and share and help people overcome some of the things, the obstacles that they're facing.
Yeah, it's incredible. Well, hey man, thanks for making time for this. I really enjoyed hearing your story and spending some time with you.
No, thank you for having me. I appreciate you.
Absolutely.
First he sings, and then he goes, and what it means, it's hard to know.
Hey, a quick update, personal update. It's been about a year since I released my book, Recapturing the Wonder. It's a book that tries to understand how the world has shaped us and how spiritual disciplines and spiritual habits can reorient us so that we can actually experience the presence of God in this world. You can check it out wherever books are sold. If you read it and you liked it, you can leave a review for me at Amazon. I'd appreciate it. All right, that's our show. Cultivated is a production of Harbor Media and the Narrativo Group. We make podcasts at Narrativo. You can learn more about us at narrativogroup.com. This episode was produced by me. It was recorded and edited and mixed by Mark Owens. Our theme song is by Roman Candle. Our music is by Dan Phelps and Roman Candle. Go to our website, cultivatedpodcast.com, and sign up for our weekly newsletter. I write a weekly essay, and we have links to all kinds of interested, cultivated-related stuff inside. Thanks again to the Christian Standard Bible. You can check them out at csbible.com. We'll see you next week.